Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Blake Murphy, and in studio, a Davis Cup champion. First ever Davis Cup for Canada, Vasek Pospisil, in studio without the Davis Cup, though. I was kind of like half hoping that you'd have it. It is massive, though.
Yeah, it's somewhere. I don't know where it is.
team event. Team to carry the trophy. That's the way it goes.
Yeah. You don't like hoist it over your head. Like there's something. Yeah. It's massive. Congrats. Thanks for doing this. Why are we so good at tennis? Like this country, we have 40 million people, which is a lot of people, but not as many people as the United States. And we keep producing high caliber tennis players. How do we keep doing this, Vasek?
That's a great question. That's a deep question. I don't know. I mean, we're not supposed to be that good, I guess. But no, we have a lot of young talent right now. Obviously, Dennis and Felix are super young, and they'll be around for a long time. And I guess in some ways, you know, you get a bit of success, and it kind of tends to breed, you know, more success, I guess, in a way, right? Like gives confidence to the younger generation, and also maybe helps, you know, young kids pick up tennis rackets. And obviously also Tennis Canada did a great job over the years. I mean they made a big change by bringing in outside help from France. The Louis Bourfiga kind of was a key component of that. He was the head of development in France, and he came in here to Canada and kind of, I think, set, you know, did an amazing job as well, and brought in great coaches. And so that definitely played a role.
How much do you guys push each other, guys and girls? Not only, you know, I could imagine you do some practice together and push each other literally in competition, but also, you know, wanting the whole group to do well and kind of trying to build off each other that way.
Oh, for sure. That plays a big role. And I mean, even you know, Milos Raonic and myself, we grew up together. We're the same age, basically. And so you kind of have that peer when, you know, and you kind of push each other. I mean, if one guy has a good result, it kind of pushes you as well. And it gives you that kind of that goal or that vision that you're like, okay, like I can do. You're just kind of pushing yourselves.
Yeah.
I think with Dennis and Felix, it's the same thing, right? And then on the women's side, same thing. I mean, you have, so I think it goes full circle. And like I said, the same, you know, when it, success breeds success. It's kind of like the same concept.
So taking home the Davis Cup, the 16th different country to win one, this is an event that dates back to 1900, a very, you know, there's a lot of legacy with this event. How meaningful is it for you as a group to, I know you guys have, you know, been runner up there before, you've been there a bunch of times, but to win one, is that kind of a culmination of a lot of what this program has been building over the last little while? Like, do you feel that, or is it still too soon after the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like, especially the last, you know, I guess it's been the last 10 years. It's just been slowly, you know, building almost like, you know, we made the world group for the first time in a long time. Then suddenly it was like, okay, well, we're here, so let's try to go a step further. And then you kind of, and then I think in 2019, when we made the final, I think even that you were like, okay, like we want to win this. And so I feel like, you know, as you're going up, you kind of want the next, you know, you're not no longer satisfied with what you already did, and you want to go one better. And so I think this time around when we made the final, there's a very different kind of energy than 2019 when we did it for the first time. And this time it's like, well, we already made the final, like that's not why we're here, you know? So I think that kind of mentality and that goal that we had was what ultimately pushed us over the finish line and the reason why we all performed so well.
So it upset me when you talked about Felix and Dennis being young guys, because you're only 32. You're not an old guy, man.
Yeah, not that old.
Simmer down.
Yeah.
and I know you were playing in the doubles match in the tie against Italy in the semifinals as well. But yeah, so you are in this sport, I guess, a little more aged than those guys, right? And you talk about your generation, you and Milos. Like, do Dennis and Felix talk to you about, you know, seeing the success you guys had in slams, making a quarterfinal yourself and Milos mm-hmm. making a final, like how impactful, like directly that had an effect on those two guys in particular and maybe taking the next step?
Yeah, I mean, I think that might be a you know, better question for them. Just
so they don't talk to you about you're my hero. Yeah. They don't say that.
Well, when they first came on to the scene, when they were 18, 19, yeah. they made some references to that. I mean, you know, to us directly, and I know in some interviews, and for sure. I mean, now as they're getting a little bit older, that, you know, it changes. But yeah, I mean, I hope, I'd like to think that maybe it left some impact. I hope it did, obviously. But yeah, at this point, they're really going on. They're shooting through the roof, so.
So this is a, yeah, they're very good. They're very good.
They're very good.
Yeah. So are you. You're still very good. And you got lots of tennis ahead of you.
Absolutely.
You're 32. Come on.
Absolutely.
Take it
easy. Best years right now.
So this is an individual sport, right? And I am very curious, individual athletes, golf, tennis, when you get, you spend the entire year essentially like on your own, right? Thinking just about yourself and how to put yourself in the best position and not relying on anybody. And if you disappoint somebody, like it's your team, I guess. But it's just yourself, right? There's no other teammates, and there's nobody to build you up, but you're just relying on yourself. And then you get thrown into these team things as individual players. Like, how does the mentality change?
Yeah, well, it's definitely very different. I think it was one of the reasons, I mean, why I think we love to play Davis Cup and love to play for a team, because it's different. It's cool. It's like you're able to kind of share the success with those around you, which makes it, you know, more meaningful and also adds more pressure in a way, because when you're when you're on the, I mean, much more pressure, right? When you're on the court and you're playing for your country, and you know that also people back home are much more, you know, invested in the result of that match, because you've, you know, versus when you're just playing for yourself at any random tournament. So there's more pressure for sure. But at the same time, you know, that can bring the best out of you, which I think it has for me personally. I mean, I love playing Davis Cup more than the other weeks throughout the year, I think, for those reasons. And that has, you know, the last 10 years or so brought the best out of me. So I feel like, it's definitely unique for sure.
So I think part of the through line of this conversation we've had so far is that this has been coming for a while for Canadian tennis, and we'll keep the focus on the men's side here because this was a men's event, but it should be said that it's on the women's side as
Absolutely.
Well. This is not a fluke win where, oh, Canada, you know, just got one. No, you guys were in the finals in 2019. You've all had success in regular play. I don't want to make this negative, but I want to ask your reaction when you hear someone like Todd Woodbridge say that there is an asterisk next to this because of Russia not being in the tournament and that opening up another wild card. Do you put any, like, does that make you feel any kind of way at all? Because I kind of think it would tick me off after such a big accomplishment. Like, you won those matches.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It actually doesn't. I mean, we're very, you know, we belong there. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, we got a little bit of like a lucky loser spot, let's say, this year, you know, for sure. But when we have a complete team, which we did, we absolutely should be in that competition. And you know, there's no question about that. So the fact, especially when we have, like I said, the full squad with Dennis and Felix, and which we did. So I think we don't look at it that way. And when I hear that, it doesn't really stir anything for me, to be honest. Cause it's like, you know what, we belong. We even from the first day, we're like, well, we want to win this competition. So, yeah, if you have that kind of mentality as a team, then you probably belong there, right?
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. And like, it'd be different if it was your, you know, the first podium finish
right.
You know, if it stood out as on paper looking like a bunch of upsets, but it doesn't. Like, you, the group of you are very accomplished, so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't stand out as all that odd.
No, and you have two top 20 players on the ATP Tour in Felix Auger-Aliassime, who went on, like, this insane tear, went a bunch of tournaments and, what, like, 16 straight matches in the fall here, and Denis Shapovalov as well. I mean, Felix in particular, because he beat some heavy hitters on that run, right? Like, beating Alcaraz.
Yeah.
Like, at his age, to be peaking it, it's all well and good to win any ATP Tour event, but we're waiting on the men's side for a breakthrough at a slam, right? And look at what it did for Bianca and her name recognition and how impactful that could be, right? And like I said, Milos has been to a final, but you get a firsthand look at this guy playing doubles with him and then winning a Davis Cup with him. Mm-hmm. Like, and not to discount Dennis, but it really does feel like Felix's year upcoming. Like, what do you anticipate for him?
Yeah, I mean, no, Felix had an unbelievable finish to this year. I mean, there's no question about that. And I would say it's the first time that, you know, at least being around him, that I would say he's ready for a Grand Slam title. I mean, just the way he's been progressing every year, just getting a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit stronger. And so, yeah, I think he's definitely ready. I think Dennis will get there too. I think he's, you know, he's not far at all. He's unbelievably talented and just struggle a little bit with consistency, which is normal this year. But tremendous potential. I mean, those two guys have, and same on the women's side. Like you said, obviously we Bianca already has the title, and it kind of goes back to the first point of you know, seeing your peers having success and wanting to have that kind of success, and that pushes you as well. And so I think there'll be a couple very exciting years going forward.
Plus, you're peaking at 32. They've got like a decade to enter their prime still.
Yeah. Well. Exactly. No, I'm playing some great tennis. Honestly, especially recently, I've the last couple of months really raised the level, and I've, you know, struggled with injuries the last 4 or 5 years. I was actually just talking about with my coach, my new coach, the other day, that I haven't had a full 12-month schedule without a serious injury since 2017. So,
wow.
And I feel like every time I start getting healthy, I start, you know, picking up some steam. And so my goal for next year, honestly, is to just be healthy the whole year and then finish in the top 50. And that I really believe that I'm playing that level and maybe higher. Who knows? We'll see how it goes, but that's the goal.
Really looking forward to that year from you. I had one more for you before we let you get out of here. I know Novak was there watching you guys, and I know that you and him have kind of been at the head of that, I guess, for lack of a better term, like a breakaway players association, or at least discussions around that. Just curious, where is that? What is the status of that? Is that kind of on the back burner for now? Are you guys still working on that?
No, it's picked up a lot of steam. A lot of progress on the back end. We have like 5 full-timers now, and we're basically, yeah, we made a couple of big announcements at the US Open this year, and I think 2023 is the year where the PTPA will you know, make its kind of mark and come out in a big way. So I'm actually really excited about that, and I think it'll change the sport for the better, honestly, and that was the reason why, you know, well, we started it in the first place. And so it'll be an exciting year all around for sure.
Thanks for doing this, Vasek.
Thank you.
You know, it was missing not to see like Daniel Nestor, who's like been the face of Canadian tennis, 91 doubles titles, your doubles partner, but you're going to celebrate with him tonight, right?
Yeah, I'm seeing him tonight. I'm seeing him probably in like an hour. So assuming he checks his phone, because I just told him like, hey, like he's ready. He knows we're hanging out, but I hope he didn't forget. But yeah, it was, I wish he was there. I mean, you know, he kind of paved the way for this, and you know, like I said, when you're young and you're looking up to the current players that are playing, doing well on the international stage. And, you know, he was that guy for me, for sure. When I was young and coming up in Davis Cup, he's, you know, like an idol. So I feel like he had a big role in this, even though he wasn't there and wasn't on the team, and obviously he's retired now, but for sure he you know, I hope it doesn't get overlooked in, you know, in terms of what his contributions to tennis in Canada, and which, you know, it won't, it's impossible, because he just did so much, and like I said, it was kind of the guy that you know, paved the way, you know, for us.
No, 100%. And yeah, give him our best. And yeah, drinks are on, first round's on Blake tonight, all right? Just send the bill
Perfect.
To Sportsnet 590 The Fan, all right?
And all right.
Care of Blake Murphy.
Carte blanche?
Yeah. Apparently. Apparently.
Great.
Thanks, Vasek.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
There is Davis Cup champion Vasek Pospisil joining us in studio. Next time, he'll have to bring the cup. All right, so we hit on the Leafs. Raptors also in action tonight in New Orleans. No CJ McCollum for the Pelicans. No Brandon Ingram. That's significant, because those are the top two scorers.
Yeah, those are good players.
For the Pelicans. But what? And the Raptors are fully healthy now, almost. I mean, no Precious Achiuwa, no Otto Porter Jr. still out.
But Pascal and Scottie.
Yeah, that's the biggies. Speaking of biggies, Zion Williamson is going to play in his 101st NBA game in his career. This guy has not been healthy, but when he's been healthy, he's been, like, honestly, Blake, one of the greatest players of all kind of all time over a 100-game span. It's ridiculous.
25 points a game on 60% shooting and lives at the free throw line. Usually free throws are one of the last things to come for a younger scorer because you have to learn how to manage that contact and get the, you know, benefit of the referee's doubt and things like that. Zion's a tank. It's very difficult to guard him without fouling him. I don't know how the Raptors plan to attack that tactically. I'm fascinated to get a look at OG Anunoby banging with him because OG Anunoby obviously on a defensive player of the year level right now, to the extent that he's now even posting on Instagram. It's a whole new OG Anunoby.
Yeah, what is that?
He hadn't posted in like 2 years and all his teammates
nice
and ex-teammates.
Photos, but they weren't standout pictures or anything.
I made fun of him. I said this, it's getting a little much, this campaigning for defensive player of the year. Yeah. Now you even post once. I'm really fascinated to see that. I think Nick Nurse's game plan will probably be a little bit more about crowding Zion Williamson and throwing a lot of stuff at him and seeing how he responds to that, primarily because CJ McCollum and Brandon Ingram aren't there. Zion is a pretty good passer. He averages 4 assists a game. I don't know that he is, you know, sharp enough yet when it comes to playing through double teams and things like that, especially with limited teammates around him. We'll say too, poor one out for Jonas Valanciunas. He's still starting for this team, but he's really not playing many minutes anymore. Mm. Even though he has been the exact same guy down to the penny in terms of what he makes every year and what he performs every year. But he's done the same thing he did in Toronto, where despite kind of keeping on, he's gotten a little undervalued there in New Orleans a bit. We also get Jose Alvarado against Fred VanVleet, who's kind of like a Spider-Man meme matchup there, and someone that I know the Raptors liked and Fred VanVleet really liked when he was in Toronto for workouts. So that should be a fun one too. A lot of fun matchups in this one. And the Hernan Gomez's.
Yeah, okay. There's so much. But I am focused on Zion.
Yes, sorry.
No,
mentioned the number one pick and an absolute superstar, and I'm like, yeah, but what about Jose Alvarado?
Yes.
Sorry.
And Wancho's brother. I called some of the stats from Zion's first 100 games, and they're mind bending. Like,
yeah.
I don't think
25 points a game, 7 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 60% shooting.
Dude, so he has the 10th most points by any player in the history of the NBA in their first 100 career games, and the most since Michael Jordan. You ever heard of him? He's the first player in NBA history with 25 points per game on, as you mentioned, 60% shooting from the floor in his first 100 games. He's the first to have those averages in a 100-game span since Shaq, and he's the fourth ever to do it. Now, what's really interesting to me is that he can shoot a three, and he's shooting the three at a reasonable rate, but he's, like, barely shooting them, right? Mm-hmm. Fewer than one attempt per game.
He's only taking
97% of his scoring either at the free throw line or in the paint. And I know this is an era of, like, sprawl ball, right? As Kirk Goldsberry would call it, and everybody who watches basketball would understand it. Man, not that I hate the three-point shot, but I love variety. This sounds stupid because there's only one Zion Williamson, but if somehow this could, and it's not like these guys don't exist, like DeAndre Ayton, there are centers, right, back-to-the-basket centers that score in the paint, but that this guy has been so good at this thing that I think has been devalued over the years is really great if he could only stay healthy.
It's just that the bar for how good you have to be to command those kind of offensive possessions has gotten so high. And Joel Embiid can score inside like this. Joel Embiid also likes to dribble and use the mid-range package and shoot threes. I think that's just something he enjoys doing, and the Sixers have kind of built around that.
But we're seeing with Anthony Davis now too, like he's stopped taking jump shots. He's maybe starting to realize that, hey, I'm 7 feet and like I can score really well from down here.
Also, no one has, the analytics revolution or sprawl ball or whatever has never been about taking fewer shots near the rim. Everyone knows the rim is the sweet spot.
Yep.
And the free throw line, unless you're a terrible free throw shooter, is the most efficient spot on the floor that you could be shooting from. The sprawl ball comes in more with okay, how do you surround Zion Williamson? Let's assume Zion Williamson is going to be healthy enough to play 70 games in a season. How do we build an offense around him that not only makes things easier for him so he can continue to get those, but also takes advantage of all the attention he's going to draw inside? Because, yeah, show me the big man who can defend Zion Williamson one-on-one. Like, Steven Adams might be strong enough, but he doesn't have the burst. OG might have the burst to match, but I think that's the one matchup in the league OG's doesn't have the strength advantage in. Like, he's really, really tough to guard. So then it's about how do you build around that. It looks a lot better with CJ McCollum and Brandon Ingram. Tonight he's going to be surrounded by guys like Herb Jones, who I love, but doesn't quite have the outside shot. It'll be interesting to see just how aggressive Nick Nurse gets with his always aggressive strategies, trying to get the ball out of Zion's hands and forcing turnovers.
Yeah, and of course, the big caveat with Zion has been 146 missed games in his 100 career played games. That's the third most missed games over a player's first 100 missed games in NBA history. The Toronto Maple Leafs will raise funds for ALS Action Canada in memory of Leafs legend Boreas Salming by offering a special one-day promotion with all net proceeds of sales of the team's reverse retro sweater going to the designated charity. All team sweaters from Wednesday's game against the San Jose Sharks, that's tonight, will also be auctioned off this week with all proceeds benefiting ALS Action Canada. In addition, the commemorative sweater patch worn by the team to honor Salming following the news of his passing last week, which is a great, great patch, will be made available to the public for purchase with all net proceeds from the sales for the remainder of the season going to the same charity, which is great, great stuff all the way around.
Yeah, ALS Action Canada, that's where you can go. You can go to ALSActionCanada.org to find out more. If you listen to my Jays Talk Plus show during the summer, you'll know that our pal from MLB.com, Sarah Langs, has also been going through a fight with that. Now, that would be U.S.-oriented organizations, but still, read up on it. Donate if you're able. And if that comes through buying a team patch or one of the auction sweaters tonight, it's a really, really great cause.
Absolutely. Time now for Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Those Toronto Maple Leafs hosting the San Jose Sharks is one of those giant lines again. Leafs minus 295 favorites against the Sharks, who are plus 245 and have already beaten the Leafs once this season. Okay. All right. Marner.
Aaron Dell, though. They didn't beat the Leafs with Aaron Dell.
No, that's a good point. Mitch Marner to score at least 1 point and match the franchise record. Yes. Minus 480. But you're.
What?
You're yeah. Yeah, come
minus
on.
Minus 480?
Well, I mean, he's done it in 17 straight games. I mean, you know, they're still trying to build casinos in Las Vegas. You got to take some juice here. No, if you want to play the dark side, be that type
no,
of guy.
No, I don't. I'm not doing that, but I might just not play any side then.
Plus 320. Raptors-Pelicans. Raptors, it is about a coin flip. I don't have the spread in front of me, but the money line is Raptors minus 113, Pelicans minus 105 without their top two players. And that was Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Last one, last little comment or question, I suppose, to you before we go and send you to Leafs pregame, Leafs and Sharks here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Mac Hollowell still in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
He's yet to experience a National Hockey League loss. He is 5-0.
You want me to go to another obscure basketball thing?
Okay.
Malcolm Miller, when he was with the Raptors, almost set the all-time NBA record for most consecutive games he appeared in without a loss.
That's
he
incredible.
Came very, very close, and I was like tracking it day to day. Someone find out for me what the NHL record is. I'll start doing the Mac Hollowell watch. It was great. Like, every time Miller didn't get into a game, the Raptors lost. And it was mostly because of like garbage time and stuff like that. But I'm really fascinated to see how far this Hollowell thing can go.
Well, yeah, his 11 minutes a game are definitely the difference between wins and losses for the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll see if they come out on
Raptors
top.
5-2 when Jeff Doughton Jr. plays.
All right.
There you go.
Just saying. All right. We'll be back tomorrow. Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.